Well, we have Mr. Trump, Donald Trump, delivering more executive orders, trying to restore America. There's a lot of chaos going on. There is wringing of hands and crying out by liberals across America, and there is a lot of soul-searching or non-soul-searching done by the Democrat Party, who just left power. It is, in other words, a very entertaining time to be alive and to be an American. And it is probably one of the best things that I've ever seen in terms of going against the grain and kind of taking perceived or a popular opinion and turning it on its head. Now, I've got a little clip from here from the Donald that I think probably really sums it up for you. And let's see here. This is from ABC News. And the title of this is "The World is a Total Mess. How could it get worse?"
You look at what happened in San Bernardino. You look at what happened all over. You look at what happened in the World Trade Center. Okay, I mean, take that as an example.
Are you at all concerned it's going to cause more anger among Muslims around the world?
There's plenty of anger right now. How can you have more?
You don't think it'll exacerbate the problem?
David, I mean, I know you're a sophisticated guy. The world is a mess. The world is as angry as it gets. Well, you think this is going to cause a little more anger? The world is an angry place. All of this has happened. We went into Iraq. We shouldn't have gone into Iraq. We shouldn't have gotten out the way we got out. The world is a total mess. The world is a mess, David.
You brought up Iraq.
All right. So how about this for an idea? The Trump is, in his heart and soul, probably a lot more conservative, or at least his values and his instincts are a lot more conservative than people ever had any idea of, for a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm just going to throw this out there as an idea, as a theory, 523-1450. Trump has some kind of instinctual understanding of the world, like he just said, and I think that's dead on. The world couldn't get any angrier. You've already got total commitment by the Muslims, the radical Muslims, to destroy America and Israel. So are we properly advised to say we don't want to do anything to make them more angry at us? I think one of the things that Trump does is he identifies the people who oppose him, and he says, I'm not going to win these people over, therefore I'm going to do what I want to do or what I feel like we need to do. Through his life, probably more liberal in the past, less liberal now, because he saw that liberalism doesn't work. And I think I get some sort of a feeling like he's kind of returning to his roots, maybe the roots of his childhood, as you know, his Presbyterianism or whatever. But I think it's sincere because he wants to go down as a great president. I take him at his word that he cares about America. He wants to return America to greatness. Now, I got this article I want to read to you a little bit from that I was reading last night that really kind of blew me away. And I think explains a lot of what's going on right now. The world that we live in now would be totally alien, totally foreign to people who lived 50 or 100 or 500 years ago. And I thought that this article really summed it up well, what we're dealing with. But Trump is doing whatever he wants to do, bearing in mind, knowing that the left is going to oppose him no matter what, and bearing in mind that the American populace has become educated as to the tactics and attitude of the far left, and using that as a way to protect himself. All right, so here's a little bit more from this interview. Trump, I think torture works, but I trust General Mattis to tell me not to do it.
The problem. It's a big problem.
Let me ask you about a new report that you are poised to lift the ban on so-called CIA black sites, prisons around the world that have been used in the past. Is that true?
Well, I'll be talking about that in about 2 hours.
Are you going to lift the ban?
You're going to see in about 2 hours.
Tonight, we are still waiting for word from the Trump White House on any decision involving those so-called black sites.
The last president, President Obama, said the U.S. does not torture. Will you say that?
Well, I have a general who I have great respect for, General Mattis, who said, I was a little surprised, who said he's not a believer in torture. As you know, Ms. Pompeo was just approved, affirmed by the Senate. He's a fantastic guy. He's going to be the head of the CIA, and you'll have somebody fabulous as opposed to the character that just got out, was not fabulous at all. And he will, I think, do a great job. And he is, I haven't gone into great detail, but I will tell you, I have spoken to others in intelligence, and they are big believers in, as an example, waterboarding.
You did tell me.
Because they say it does work. It does work.
Mr. President, you told me during one of the debates that you would bring back waterboarding and a hell of a lot worse.
I want to keep our country safe. I want to keep our country safe.
What does that mean?
When they're shooting, when they're chopping off the heads of our people and other people, when they're chopping off the heads of people because they happen to be a Christian in the Middle East, when ISIS is doing things that nobody has ever heard of since medieval times, would I feel strongly about waterboarding? As far as I'm concerned, we have to fight fire with fire. Now, with that being said, I'm going with General Mattis. I'm going with my secretary because I think Pompeo is going to be phenomenal. I'm going to go with what they say. But I have spoken as recently as 24 hours ago with people at the highest level of intelligence, and I asked them the question, does it work? Does torture work? And the answer was yes. Absolutely.
You're now the president. Do you want waterboarding?
I don't want people to chop off the citizens or anybody's heads in the Middle East, okay? Because they're Christian or Muslim or anything else. I don't want, look, you are old enough to have seen a time that was much different. You never saw heads chopped off until a few years ago. Now they chop them off and they put them on camera and they send them all over the world. So we have that and we're not allowed to do anything. We're not playing on an even field. I will say this. I will rely on Pompeo and Mattis and my group. And if they don't want to do, that's fine. If they do want to do, then I will work that end. I want to do everything within the bounds of what you're allowed to do legally. But do I feel it works? Absolutely, I feel it works.
So you'd be okay with it as president?
I will rely on General Mattis. And I'm going to rely on those two people. And others. And if they don't want to do it, it's 100% okay with me. Do I think it works? Absolutely.
All right, so there you have it. Waterboarding works. Is he going to bring back waterboarding? I don't know. I don't know if, and this is a debate that has gone off in the past, but whether waterboarding is technically torture. And one of the problems in America today is that there has become this kind of politically correct way of building a consensus in which all of the truth is on one side and none of the truth is on the other. One example is the gay marriage debate. 10 years ago, I don't think anybody would have fathomed that the Supreme Court would have gone in that direction. Now that it has arrived, it goes beyond dispute that, you know, homosexuality and gay marriage is a phenomenally good thing. Cannot be criticized. I think that, and just as an example, and there are people who have the religious or moral or intellectual opposition to that, pardon me, and you're bearing all this opposition, and I think as a general rule, if you allow society to work through problems as opposed to the Supreme Court going and just making decisions on explosive and deeply felt and disagreed upon issues, it would be better in this example to let the states, I think, have decided gay marriage, whereas a state like California or New York is definitely going to probably end up with gay marriage. And yet the courts themselves and the people themselves voted in California Proposition 8 not to allow gay marriage. So you've got an elite, the elites running the country off the rails and off the side of a cliff to support their ideals, and they're using the court system, they're misusing the court system. And these people that get on the courts, then a lot of them become more liberal, because that's what you know, that's how you grow, I guess, as a judge. But the liberalism that they bring in is a mirage. And this mirage has been extraordinarily destructive of America, in my opinion. And now, you know, Trump is pushing all this stuff back. So I do not claim that Trump is in any way perfect. He is extraordinarily entertaining. But, all right, let's, but I do agree with this idea that, you know, Obama acted like there was one reality, his opinion. That is a bad thing. What he did was a bad thing. Barack Obama abused America in the economy, you know, as a result. I say, look, the economy didn't grow. He treated American citizenship like it was toilet paper. If you walk across the border, you become an American citizen, or you are a citizen in another country. You just have to move here to express your citizenship. He lit a fire in the Middle East that is still burning. He was rejected by important countries in Asia, like the Chinese and the Philippines, because they didn't have any respect for him. He didn't try to go through the legislature for the elected representatives of the people. He made executive orders, and now that's coming back to haunt him. He put out essentially a false image of America, not only in America, but across the world. And what's going on now is just trying a little bit of recalibration, restructuring. We'll take our first break here. 618 Kelly O'Connell, 619 on the button, and Frank Sinatra. And got some big news, a big announcement for you tomorrow, so you definitely want to tune in. And today we have the Rossin Report.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.
Okay, one of the things that's going on that is in the news, obviously, in the midst of all these executive orders, is this wall situation and immigration kind of together. Now, some people have said it's impossible to build a wall across the United States, which is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard, so I'm not going to comment on that. But I played a clip yesterday in which engineers discussed how to do it, and they said the easiest way would be to take those big highway cement panels and put those up across the United States because it's a known technology, and dig it down so that people won't be encouraged to tunnel under it. Certain experts have said it'll take years to secure the border. And so I put it on Obama. I put it on George W. Bush. I put it on, you know, I'll put it on Reagan, for that matter, if you want, Nixon, whoever you want to. Excuse me. Whoever you want to include in the chain of responsibility for not securing the border. But we got to do it now. And my problem with the Democratic Party that has been in power in Washington, and also the liberal movement in general, far leftism, is it confuses how they would like the world to be, or how they say it should be with how it is. And I'll give you an example. The far left believes as an element of its religion that that global warming is occurring and it's destroying the earth. Now, in terms of destruction, other than maybe claims about the ice fields in the Arctic and Antarctic, there really hasn't been a lot of proof. You know, we don't see the ocean rising. We don't see people getting cooked to death. We see weather anomalies, but there's always weather anomalies. But what the left has done, and this is one of the main problems of far leftism, is it claims as a public policy that global warming is more important than having a strong economy. And so they do everything that they can. They take federal land out of development for oil, and they do a lot of other crazy things to supposedly fight against global warming. Now, whether they're sincere or not is another issue. But assuming that they're sincere, they're still taking something that is really, in my opinion, from the scientific aspect, not proved, because they have not been able to predict the future. You know, for example, Al Gore gives these lectures and puts in his movies, there's going to be a radical increase in hurricanes. And then for 10 years, we don't have a hurricane hit us. So global warming is not a science in the sense that it is well-established enough to be able to predict the future. So anyway, but that's more important, and that's more dangerous. Global warming is more dangerous than ISIS and radical Islam. So you see how this kind of this fantasy world comes and gets, and I could give you 1,000 more examples, but this fantasy world of liberalism that demands to be dealt with, the fantasy, this magical kingdom, this magical thinking comes in and takes the place of real public policy that helps people. For instance, because liberalism aspires to treat all people as if they're from the same country, because they want globalism in which there are no countries, therefore we have to continually allow illegals to come in and establish themselves as if they were born and raised here. And if you criticize them, then if you resist this, you're a racist. In the meantime, hundreds of thousands of violent felons have been allowed to relocate here, and people have come in and, you know, been removed and come back again 10, 20, 30 times, and some of these people committing the worst crimes. So you've got this fantasy about globalism, which is another aspirational, this is how the world should be kind of a thing, taking the place of actual public policy that helps people. You might want the globe to be global. You might want the world to turn into a new world order or whatever. In the meantime, why don't you protect your citizens from the violent felons from other countries who don't have a legal right to be here in the first place? You see what I'm saying? All right. So anyway, here's Trump speaking about the wall.
Special report.
And this is all an interview with David Muir he's the anchor from ABC.
Reporting.
David Muir.
Good day, and we are coming to you from the White House, where we have just conducted the first interview with President Donald Trump right here at the White House. He made several breaking headlines here, including his visit this afternoon, a short time from now, to the Department of Homeland Security, where he will sign an order to begin the wall, that promised wall during the campaign along our border with Mexico. I did ask him who will pay for the wall, at least at the start. Here's where we begin. Are you going to direct U.S. funds to pay for this wall? Will American taxpayers pay for the wall?
Ultimately, it'll come out of what's happening with Mexico. We're going to be starting those negotiations relatively soon, and we will be in a form reimbursed by Mexico, which I've always said.
So they'll pay us back?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Yes.
So the American taxpayer will pay for the wall at first?
All it is we'll be reimbursed at a later date from whatever transaction we make from Mexico.
Mexico's president said in recent days that Mexico absolutely will not pay, adding that it goes against our dignity as a country and our dignity as Mexicans. He says, they're not paying.
David, I think he has to say that. He has to say that. But I'm just telling you, there will be a payment. It will be in a form, perhaps a complicated form. And you have to understand, what I'm doing is good for the United States. It's also going to be good for Mexico. We want to have a very stable, very solid Mexico.
When does construction begin?
As soon as we can. As soon as we can physically do it.
Within months?
I would say in months, yeah. I would say in months. Certainly planning is starting immediately.
President Trump on the wall that he will sign an order for this afternoon. I'm joined now by our chief White House correspondent, Jonathan Carl. And John, there are also reports breaking that this White House is considering bringing back so-called CIA black sites used for interrogation around the world. They haven't been used for quite some time.
All right. We already covered that. And Trump said that that decision will be made, and we're still waiting on that. Let's take a little break here. I want to come back and I want to talk about this article that I thought was so illuminating. It was really, really amazing article. Very well thought out, very deep. I'm going to spend from here to the next half of an hour. I'll read you some headlines and then come back and do that. 523-1450 and 805-61802 text and AM Las Cruces, Callie O'Connell. It's 6:31, a little nippy outside. I think it's under 30 degrees, but I'll come back. I'll check on that for you.
Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore.
Shia LaBeouf, whatever movies he's been in, I looked him up yesterday. He was in a Disney TV show. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was. It ran for 3 years. Anyway, this guy has put together a wall of where people come to protest against Trump, and they get recorded there. So performance art or whatever. He's arrested at Trump protest. You want to talk about AstroTurf, fake people creating fake protests or fake news? This kid grows up in Hollywood. He grows up in the Disney system and is now presenting himself as a tortured artist. I just find that so absurd. Anyway, all of these people out there fighting Trump, do they even know what they're fighting for? Other than leftism. That's what's known as a rhetorical question, of course. Now, let me hit a few headlines before I dive into this article. Trump's White House charm offensive contrast to solitary Obama sets dizzying pace in first days, wall construction to begin in months, Mexico braced for confrontation, order weekly publications of crimes committed by illegals, defiance from mayors, the sanctuary city mayors, border officials. It will take years to secure the nation. Next, drastically reduce U.S. involvement in the United Nations. GOP announcing it will not meet its own announced deadline of Obamacare removal, but it's working on it. There was an event in Chicago, a vigil for a gunshot victim, and six people were shot there. Chicago is an absolute implosion. It's in free fall. And Rahm Emanuel, who acted like the second smartest person in the world, took that city over, and he's turned it from bad to worse. And Virginia Zoo scouring neighborhood for missing red panda. How are refugees seen in Europe? A refugee drowns in the Venice Canal as tourists laugh, joke, film on phone. So maybe that's just the tourists, but a lot of people in Europe are very, very upset about the number of refugees that have been brought in. Feeling down, take off your clothes. And let's see, from the Google News, immigration hawks pressuring Trump on campaign promises. Seems like he's coming through with all of them, so relax. Let's see here. Well, May meets the leader of the female leader of Britain meets with Trump, and they're saying we can lead the world, and it's a new Reagan Thatcher. All right, so let me get into this article here. Let me just kind of get into it because it is it really kind of sums up a lot of what was going on. And here, okay, so here's the thing. Here's the name of the article. Donald Trump is the first president to turn postmodernism against itself. So let me first look up for you. Let me get a working definition here of postmodernism. But it's the age we're living in, and it's highlighted by a sense of irony and relativism. There is no truth. You only find your own truth. And so, let's see here. All right. So here is. Postmodernism is a relativistic system of observation and thought that denies absolutes and objectivity. All right. So anyway, we're living in a time when only an opinion counts. All right. So, and it applies to literature, art, philosophy, architecture, fiction, culture, cultural and literary criticism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, we know that we're living in this time. Here, I'll give you an example. Well, postmodernism has a somewhat bizarre application. It says that all religions are the same, so that no religion is triumphant over another, which says that no standard from any religion is absolute. So gets rid of traditional morality, right? We've all seen that. Here's an example, slut shaming. You cannot call a woman out for being a slut because that's her life choice and you don't have a right to judge her. You can't judge other people in postmodernism. So you end up with somebody like the Kardashian family whose fortune was based on that one of the female children in the family who has a remarkable body or incredible beauty or whatever, however you judge these things. And she did a sex tape, and the sex tape made the entire family famous and rich because it started off this empire. And the girl actually talked to the mother, or the mother suggested it to the girl. Why don't you do this? So the whole family is complicit. The idea that someone would do that and become famous 50 years ago is absurd. That would just destroy the family's reputation. All right. So Donald Trump is the first president to turn postmodernism against itself. All right, so he says here that the anti-hero has become established in postmodernism or the postmodern culture. The anti-hero, Tony Soprano, Walter White, Frank Underwood. So Walter White is the guy in Breaking Bad, who at a certain point in Breaking Bad says he is selling methamphetamine not because he has to save himself from cancer, but he likes to do it. So anti-heroes have become established in our culture. Anti-heroes, and I'm just going to quote this guy, have long found homes in westerns, gangster movies, and crime dramas. And so you think of Scarface, an anti-hero, this guy that becomes this cocaine boss in this cult, cocaine multimillionaire in Miami, and in starts living out the American dream before he's killed by the authorities. So when Tony Montana is going through all these things, he's not a hero or a villain. He's an anti-hero, according to this. So he's saying that Donald Trump has kind of become an anti-hero because he stands up for all these things that are supposed to be totally wrong. He stands up for this ban on Muslims. You're not supposed to judge people's religion. You're definitely not supposed to use people's religion to keep them from coming into the country. You know, all religions are the same. Therefore, Islam is the religion of peace. You're not supposed to say that Mexicans are rapists or the Mexicans that are helping with the border crossings are rapists. However he said that. You're not supposed to talk about putting up a wall because we're supposed to be more inclusive instead of excluding. So he's, you know, Trump has said all of these things. And what this guy points out in this article, and this is, by the way, from The Federalist, which is a great online magazine, David Ernst. It's got a lot of stuff that's too detailed or too philosophical to really successfully share about, you know, this article. But let me just put out there what he says, which is that in taking positions that are not PC and then refusing to even give the traditional excuses or apologies for them, he became a hero to all of the people who feel like they've been beat up by the PC system. And in doing that, he got swept to victory. And so if you say, for example, this society and the elites have already said to be a Republican is a bad thing, is an evil thing, because Republicans are opposed to abortion. Republicans are in favor of the Bible and the, you know, traditional way of doing things. So Republicans are stupid and evil. Trump walks into this, accepts the mantle of conservative Republican, and just lets the bullets bounce off. And that's what this guy is saying is the most amazing thing. And so a little bit earlier this year, here's a little speech that Trump delivers to the Al Smith political dinner. Trump says, "And a special hello to all of you in this room who have known and loved me for many, many years. It's true. The politicians, they've had me to their homes. They've introduced me to their children. I've become their best friends in many instances. They've asked for my endorsement, and they've always wanted my money and even called me really a dear, dear friend, but then suddenly decided when I ran for president as a Republican that I've always been a no good, rotten, disgusting scoundrel, and they totally forgot about me." So Trump does is he turns it on its head. Instead of taking the violation of the PC movement and falling down and crying and sucking his thumb and then being sent off to re-education camp like everybody else does, he refuses to back down. And he shows that there is another side to the PC movement. By embracing things that are not politically correct, you can become a hero because you were refuse to be intimidated and beaten down by these people that their only interest is power. They really don't care about anybody else or anything else. They use the political correctness to try to dominate a certain group of people and take over from them. And this guy is saying Trump turned that upside down. We'll be right back. 647 Kelly O'Connell.
In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
All right, so we're living at this time, postmodernism, where there's no truth, right? There's just your opinion. And so people who try to do good are portrayed as fools, because you can't really say what good is. All you can do is be sincere. So somebody like Frank Underwood or Walter White or Tony Soprano are all unto themselves. They're sincere. They're sticking with what they're doing, and so they become these anti-heroes. So anyway, that's why we're stuck in this bizarre situation where political correctness has kind of crept up and taken over the whole society, even though most people probably resent it. I'm sure more than 50%, and a large number of people out there disagree with part or the entire theory of political correctness. Whatever it is, I mean, political correctness is contradictory on its face. But so here he says in this article, and this, by, if you're just tuning in, I'm reading from an article called "Donald Trump is the First President to Turn Postmodernism Against Itself," and it is from The Federalist by David Ernst, and it was published on the 23rd of this month. So he writes here that postmodernism merely hides its hypocritical idealism. So provided that the postmodern man and woman believes in nothing and values nothing, one would not be unreasonable in concluding that postmodern people don't care about anything. But anyone who knows postmodern culture knows that nothing could be further from the truth. Instead, the cult of non-discrimination, with all of its bright-eyed idealists, which try to make the world a better place, are permanently at work, and they're trying to create a utopia. So we've got all these things out there where, and this is what is destroying. This is what is destroying the education system out here, and this is some, whether the term, you know, postmodernism is bouncing off your ear. It's kind of this cult of irony in which there is no truth. And there's this small group of things that has to be protected. And so it's women and gender and race and sexual orientation and all this and socialism. All of these things have to be fanatically defended. And so recently, the PC movement has become increasingly violent and furious. And, you know, so one group of people saying that this other group of people, you know, you can't talk about certain subjects, which is one reason people like talk radio, because we tend to break these taboos, but you can't criticize certain things. You can't even talk about a lot of stuff. And so the postmodern movement has a problem if it claims that there is no truth, and how does it defend its own ideas? So what happens is, into this situation, in comes Trump, and whether by you know, education or just by instinct, he sees the outline of postmodernism, of the PC movement, of whatever, however you want to describe it, and he uses that to his advantage. It's kind of like judo. So Hillary Clinton attacks Trump for his sexism. Trump immediately turns that around and says, well, since you brought it up, why don't we discuss all of the women that claim that your husband has assaulted them and raped them? So Hillary Clinton has a lot to lose in that interaction, so she drops it. Now Trump also gets up and says, I'm the biggest, you know, when they have the clip of him saying that he grabs women by their genitals, or he could, he says, I'm the greatest friend of women. He's always got a response to this stuff. I know this is a little bit abstract, but I think it explains why Trump has had so much power and he never gets knocked down. He refuses to apologize. Here's the thing. Once you buy into the apology, you've kind of handed over your power. You've said that the politically correct movement is right, and I have to acknowledge that. So here's the question from all this. Would we as a society be willing to, on our own, challenge political correctness? Would we be willing to stand up and refuse to apologize? And maybe not necessarily viciously debate it, but just say, I don't believe in that. I cannot agree with that. And I'm not going to apologize. So, I mean, you'd say, well, I could get fired from my job, or my spouse could, you know, my spouse could be told that, you know, she's not welcome in this group anymore, but my children could be harmed. But what if we all started doing that? What if we all started saying, I don't agree with political correctness. I don't accept, you know, the premise, for example, of the Women's March. The Women's March that just happened is absurd on its face in a lot of ways. And it, I think when you see that the result of feminism has been a lot of coarsening and obscene movement for women in this culture, and that it has put pressure on women to work, whether they want to or not, to have, you know, a woman who's married and has kids, especially young children, is on kind of a slave ship where she has to, you know, take care of the family, has to cook and clean and take care of the kids. And then she goes to work. She puts the kids in childcare, kind of tears apart the family a little bit. But there is this politically correct expectation that all women are going to work and are going to live for themselves and are going to, you know, kind of complete their destiny. In the meanwhile, studies have shown that men are increasingly struggling in this culture. And so I would say the impact of political correctness and postmodernism has been extraordinary. I believe that's what Trump, in his own way, in his own maybe kind of clumsy way, is fighting against, trying to return the culture to some level of sanity, to be able to stand up and not be punished for saying, I don't accept political correctness. I, you know, maybe I accept the right that you have the right to be, to do this thing, but I will retain the right to criticize that and say I shouldn't be sued or fined $120,000 because I won't bake a cake for a particular group because I still have my freedom of choice in America. Anyway, Frank Sinatra taking us out here. Kelly O'Connell in Las Cruces. Just something to think about. We got Ben Rossin coming along, and we'll be right back with that. Good morning, 6706, and yeah, we're lucky to have Ben Rossin here and his Rossin Report. And Ben, welcome to the studio as always.
Good morning, Kelly. Thank you.
How's it going?
You know, Kelly, it's going well. Of course, we had some interesting things happen yesterday. Great to have President Trump in the White House, and he signed some executive orders yesterday that'll have some impact here in Doñana County. And so I figured we'd talk about that a little bit this morning.
I'd love it.
You know, Kelly, there's two things that that could classify Doñana County as a sanctuary county. One is a safe communities ordinance that the county has passed that says that the sheriff is not allowed to ask about immigration status when he pulls individuals over, and also that any staff member of the county cannot ask those questions. And so that could be one item that we'll have to look at revisiting. And Kelly, the other one is immigration holds, ICE holds at the detention center. So when we have a situation where we've got an individual in the detention center and ICE says, would you hold him for us? We're going to come get him. Then at this point, the county does not enforce those holds.
All right, so we've seen that there's a debate going on right now in Washington, D.C., and there's some pushback across the nation in mayors in sanctuary cities. And here is the upshot. The federal government has rules. Those rules, we don't have federal police and federal agents across the United States to fulfill these, so it's up to the states to fulfill the federal rules. And in this case, in these cities and in counties across the United States, there are holdouts against federal immigration policy, but it's federal law.
Federal law. That's
it,
right.
It is applied across the United States. It applies equally here in Doña Ana. And Trump has said there is going to be a cost. There's going to be a penalty to resisting the federal rules. So what does it look like the cost might be?
Well, you know, Kelly, there's a lot of talk right now, and I think it's hard to tell exactly what that cost will be. We do receive a lot of funding from the federal government, and of course, that's been one of the things that President Trump has talked about going away and not having that funding. Although I think he's always referred to sanctuary cities, and so does it apply to counties or not? I think it does, because really what I've seen written is more about communities than only municipalities. So there's a lot on the line to risk there from the federal funding.
And in a state that is pretty much at the top of the list of getting money from the government, and we've talked about this before, where billions of dollars of the income for New Mexico and its underdeveloped economy come from there, how could we possibly risk that?
You know, Kelly, there's what people don't realize a lot of times is that at the county level, we don't pay for any new road construction. And we also don't pay for most redos on roads where you have to repave the road. Soledad Canyon, Baylor Canyon, Dripping Springs, all of those roads, those are all paved with federal dollars. We start looking at other roads in our community, and that's where a lot of the funding for those roads, a lot of the funding for the dams and for water control measures, a lot of that comes from either the state or the federal level. And so I think we're going to need to take a careful look at where we fall in President Trump's executive order and how we can make sure that we don't harm our local community.
And here is an example of the kind of idiocy that's going on out there. You've got a city that has totally failed to protect its citizens. It is Chicago. You have a mayor who used to be the right-hand man and the brains for arguably the most liberal president in U.S. history, who has also wreaked havoc with his policies in the same area by encouraging millions of illegals to come into America and treat them as if they're citizens. Now this mayor, Rahm Emanuel, is saying in the midst of unprecedented levels of violence, murder, including innocent people just walking down the street pushing strollers, you know, babies getting shot by drive-by bullets, this mayor is saying, you can come here, you're safe, we'll take you in. It just shows you that this complete irresponsible and hyper-idealistic utopian and totally failed vision for how to make a community safe. And we don't want to make the same mistakes here where we're not watching our P's and Q's. We're not doing what we're supposed to be. Why do we have the right in general to break federal law?
You know, Kelly, when a country has laws, they need to be followed. And if we're not going to follow the law, then the law needs to be changed. And so until that law is changed, that is the law of the land, and we need to abide by it. You know, I think, Kelly, that's one of the reasons that the ICE holds, or the Immigration Custom Enforcement holds at the detention center, are so interesting to me. You have a situation where someone has been arrested for a reason, is in the detention center. They've done something wrong. Immigration comes and says, hey, hold them, we're going to come get them, and we refuse to hold them and release them back out on the street. And I think that goes a little bit to the point that you are making about Chicago.
Yes, and I mean, basically, as a city leader, when you see that we're not really, in the same way that Chicago is not protecting the physical safety of its citizens, we're not really protecting the financial and economic health of our citizens. We're not building up the economy. We have a number of public officials who stated on or off the record, this is a no-growth area. We're going to do what we can to discourage business. At the same time, we're trying to bring in illegals, which, even in an ideal world, bring in extra cost and extra burden, some of which, as you say, We don't know the backgrounds of these people. We don't know if they're maybe a person who's leaving Mexico because they're being hunted for a violent felony.
That's right, Kelly. And at the point that they're arrested and put in the detention center, I think that's a good point to say, hang on a minute. Let's go ahead and make sure that they're in this country legally.
And, it's coming to a head. All of the decisions by the last administration that have not been successful, they're not successful because they make the country arguably poorer and less safe.
That's right. Yeah.
So those are coming to a head here. And are the people here really going to turn their back on the only sure source of income we have in this part of the world, which is federal dollars?
You know, Kelly, and you start talking about federal dollars, we get federal dollars in a lot of ways. I talked about some of the infrastructure that we receive. We get some PILT money payment in lieu of taxes, which is for federal lands inside Doñana County. That amounts to a couple million dollars a year. There's also all of the federal jobs that we have in our community. And so at what level does some of that stop? And I don't know what the answer is, but this could be a very significant item to Doñana County, and we're going to need to look at it very carefully as we move forward.
Who are the people that are pushing? Can you name a few names, people that are pushing this as a sanctuary area?
Absolutely. Billy Garrett is a big one. He's been very involved. Even last week on the dais, he talked about how anti-Trump he was, and he's participating in marches and other things, and wants to make sure that we stay a sanctuary community.
Do you think it is appropriate for a county official to get up and state their open opposition to the president of the United States?
Well, you know, Kelly, I think there's kind of two sides to that. I certainly didn't agree with everything President Obama did.
Excuse me. But you didn't get up and use your official your time of at the dais or your public pronouncements, you didn't use that to attack Obama, did you?
No, never did, and I wouldn't. You know, that's not the role that we have there.
In other words, that's wrong to do, and we need to call Billy Garrett out for that. He's the elected president, and if Billy Garrett wants to join the resistance, he should resign his position, right?
Hopefully we don't end up with a resistance, absolutely.
Well, he's already stated he's engaging in resistance against Trump, and he's articulating it through sanctuary status. County status. Billy Garrett, please resign.
You know, Kelly, when we're sworn in, we're sworn to uphold the laws of the United States and the state of New Mexico. And right now, that is one of the laws.
The far left believes it is under its own set of laws that supersede U.S. laws. A kind of a bizarre, a twist on natural law, that they have a law above the law, but they can't. You know, when they try to apply these laws, it's just total destruction and chaos. 7:16 with Ben Rawson. We'll be right back. And we got a little more Frankie for you. And it is AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Big announcement for you tomorrow. So make sure you tune in or tell the other listeners too.
When I was 17, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for small town girls and soft summer nights.
Well, we're here with Ben Ross and Ben Ross and Report. And so anyway, Ben, this is a worry. And I would just really ask, I'd ask Ben or Billy Garrett, if you're at the forefront of the resistance of Trump, which it sounds like you are because you're willing to misuse your time speaking in public, please resign and join the army that are opposed to Trump. Don't misuse your office and your seat. You've already harm this community by bringing in things that the people have voted against that have turned out to be a total disaster, like the the ghost fleet of buses, you know? So the proper thing would be, if since you're an advocate, is to resign and to pursue your advocacy. Anyway, Ben.
Kelly, I'm so grateful to have you on the air here, and I know that your listeners are as well, but having the opportunity to have the conservative voice here in Doñana County, in Las Cruces, is a wonderful thing, and I really appreciate what you do.
No, you're welcome. Thanks for sponsoring it. You're basically the only business that's ever come in and sponsored us. So, you know, I know one of the reasons that you've done it is to express some support that we have a place to talk about our issues.
Absolutely. And you've got another sponsor as well, I think. I need to take my wife over for dinner at Cafe Go-Go.
Cafe Go-Go. Got to get over there. I'm playing piano Friday and Saturday if you want to come over and chat. We have a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this? I can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit. I don't know why. It's very faint.
Oh. Here, hold on. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's a little bit better.
Okay. So I got a question for you. Actually, I got a question for Commissioner Rossett. So Billy Garrett is saying that the county is going to be a sanctuary county. Can he be legally sued by the citizens of the county if they are harmed because of his decision to allow sanctuary activities?
Well,
I'll hang up so I can hear.
Thanks, Jesse.
You know, Kelly, that's a good question. Jesse, thanks for calling in. I don't know that one individual commissioner could be sued on that. That is something that five commissioners voted on to become a sanctuary, or excuse me, to pass the Safe Communities ordinance that was passed. And then the other item with the ice holds is something that the county manager has done without direction from the county commission. But it takes five people to make a decision, or I should say it takes three. You've got to have a majority of the five. And so he has had to have some friends on past commissions to get that done. And hopefully this future commission will take another look at that.
Two issues when you're thinking about suing somebody who's in the government. And the first one is sovereign immunity, that generally speaking, public officials are understood to have immunity in their decision making. That would mean also that they're making decisions within their right and privilege of the office. The other side of that is standing. If a person needs to have standing, they have to be affected. And so a person could get in and argue that the government was working outside of it. It was ultra vires. It was working outside of its powers. I think you probably could at least sue the commission. I mean, you could sue them to stop a certain activity.
Certainly. Yeah. You could
federal court.
Absolutely.
So Jesse, if you're considering that, feel free to call my office.
Kelly, what's your phone number?
523-1450 here. And my number for the office, 805-1245.
You know, Kelly, we talked a few minutes ago about different sponsors of the show. And I think it's important to realize the amount of time, too, that you put in and really are the sponsor yourself, although you don't plug your own practice very often.
I'm ill-advised in that one, but that's true. So what does the future hold for Doñana? And we got another call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
Good morning, Donna. Hope you're well. What's going on?
I heard a rumor that KOBE was in March going to quit operating, and that will affect your program, I think. And will we, after that, be able to hear our conservative voice in this city?
I can confirm that there has been a discussion about the format of the radio station. So other than that, I can't really get into it.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. So, but I do have an announcement tomorrow, and it is kind of exhausting.
You know, Kelly, I sure appreciate what you do, and Donna brings up a good point about the airwaves that you bring to us and giving an opportunity for another side to be heard. So, and that's one of the reasons that, Kelly, I've supported your show and been on here on a weekly basis to try to make sure people know what's going on. And Donna is a great individual coming to the county commission meetings and being involved like that. So we appreciate, I appreciate Donna, you coming and being involved there. You know, Kelly, as we talk about being involved in our local government, there's an election taking place right now. The school board election is underway. Early voting is taking place at the county building, so you can go down there. And then, of course, election day is February 7th, and there will be several voting locations around the community. So I encourage people to get out and vote for your school board.
Absolutely. Anything else?
That's it. You know, Kelly, I wanted to mention one thing about the business real quick. We have, for a long time, we've been selling light fixtures and fans and other types of things like that to builders. And recently we've put those into the showroom with a full array of different light bulbs and things like that. So if people are looking for lighting needs, come by and see us at Ross and Builder Supply.
And where is that located?
2355 Nevada Avenue. It's right on the corner of Travis and Nevada.
You get to it by way of Loman, but you would want to come. How do you get when you're on Loman and
yeah,
go up the hill?
Loman, take Walnut. One direction goes, take Walnut. One direction goes to Walmart. The other direction will come down and connect to Nevada right past Young Park, and then just go east on there, and you'll see our building.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks so much for sponsoring the show every month. It's great to have you on. We have one more call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna again.
Donna, round two. What's up?
The Support Your Local Police Committee is sponsoring a 6-DVD course in the U.S. Constitution. And this gives anybody and everybody here in Las Cruces and Doñana County a chance to come and learn about our U.S. Constitution, our ultimate law of the land. And I watched the first DVD. It's awesome, and I encourage everybody that is interested in learning more about our government to come and learn. If you don't know anything about it, now is the time that you can really learn what the U.S. Constitution is and why our founding fathers made it the way they did.
Fantastic. Thanks for the call. Have a good day.
Yeah, and they can call me. They can call me at 520-7938 to register for the 6-DVD course. And for the 6 DVDs, it's $10. So you can't beat that.
Thank you, Donna. Have a good day. All right. Thanks a lot, Ben, for coming in.
Absolutely, Kelly. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, folks. We'll take a little break here and call up Billy Garrett and tell him if you're opposed to him using his public position to attack the president, at least let him know that you don't appreciate that. 728, and we need our federal dollars. AM Las Cruces 523-1450. We'll be back.
We'd hide from the light on the village green. When I was 17.
Yeah, big announcement tomorrow. And you may or may not be able to guess what it is. But anyway, I've got a little clip here for you that I think is in response to what's going on across the United States, including here. Billy Garrett, one of our elected officials, has decided that he's going to publicly oppose the presidency and the lawmaking of our commander-in-chief. But there's a movement growing to delegitimize the Trump presidency. Check this out.
Impact segment tonight, giving President Trump a fair hearing. As you know, some on the left are not doing that, claiming his presidency is illegitimate. Joining us now from Washington, Jonathan Turley, teaches constitutional law at George Washington University. So you've been critical of the delegitimizers. Why?
Well, I think that there is an effort, a concerted effort, to create some type of political mythology to suggest that President Trump is some type of pretender in office. And I think that's a dangerous thing. You know, my house was filled with friends and family that came to protest the inauguration, and I didn't join them, nor did my kids, because I've taught them that, you know, the 4th of July is an important holiday, but it was basically a declaration to a foreign leader. The inauguration day is far more important, because that's where we keep a promise to each other that even when we're divisive, even when we're hateful in elections, we come together on that day every 4 years, and we affirm what's really a leap of faith under our system. And to see all of those members of Congress boycotting this inauguration, I thought was shameful. You know,
now,
what
do you think is driving, they have named it now, the Trump derangement syndrome? What is driving that?
Well, I think part of it is that there's a lot of folks in this town that want to redirect a lot of this anger. You know, the Democrats helped bring about this election as much as Donald Trump did. You know, they didn't look at polls that said that people wanted a anti-establishment figure. They didn't look at polls showing that Hillary Clinton had record negatives. They pushed through her like she was the anointed candidate for the Democratic Party. They steamrolled Sanders. The results should not surprise many people, but there's a lot of folks that want to suggest, look, it wasn't us. It wasn't our message. It wasn't our choices. Much of that same leadership is still in place. And instead, they want to suggest that somehow he stole the election or that Putin gave him the office, which is, of course, ridiculous.
Those are all devices to generate a real hatred of Donald Trump. So he evokes this powerful support for his people who love him, okay, but also this hatred for people who loathe him. And I'm wondering what drives the loathing. Is it any one thing? Is it his personality? Is it a stance on an issue? What do you think it is?
No, I think that's what's so dangerous about this, is that there is this disconnect from reality as people create this mythology of just total hate. You know, I had one relative in my house who was talking about Trump supporters, very negative comment. I said, you know, there are very nice Trump supporters. There's about 47% of people voted for him. So you do realize that there are lots of nice Trump supporters. And she wouldn't accept that. And I think that's part of this
Why wouldn't
this
she
mythology.
Accept it, though? You're a logical man.
Well, I think
she wouldn't accept that 47% of the voting public isn't evil. She wouldn't accept that. That's irrational.
I think that there is this rhetoric that is pushing everyone to extremes on both sides, and it's dangerous for a government like ours. We have to get along at some point. We've got problems to solve. And sometimes when you have a big change, like the Trump administration, it can bring positive things. You can relook at issues.
All right, so everybody knows what's going on. The media is misusing its opportunity, much like Billy Garrett is misusing his office to attack Trump. Now, here is something, just bear in mind the number of far left advocates who've hidden themselves in the media over the years. Here's Cokie Roberts comparing keeping Syrians out of America to shutting the Jews out during World War II, an absurd, a truly absurd analogy.
Cokie, what do you think?
How are you doing?
I'm good. Cokie, what do you think?
Well, I think that he is, as you say, going full steam ahead. There's several things here to worry you, however, because we did have yet again yesterday another questioning of voters, and truth telling seems to be not part of what's going on. And if the reports about what he plans to do today are true, I think they're extremely dangerous for the United States of America.
Which reports?
The reports that he's going to restart the interrogation techniques offshore that the CIA conducted earlier before the Obama administration. The idea that he's going to shut out refugees. I mean, this is the shutting out. There are 8 million children in the world right now who are refugees. 8 million. And if you shut out Syrian refugees at this moment, it's like shutting the Jews out during World War II.
So let's get methodically through everything.
How are the Syrian refugees, some of which are jihadists, analogous to the Jews in World War II? That is absurd. Cokie Roberts is a far leftist, and all of these people who got into the media as basically as missionaries, and they were putting out their missionary opinion about liberalism over the years and pretending that it was reality. And if you disagreed with them, you know, instead of being upfront, they hid in the media and they constantly filtered the news and they shaped it to fit their liberal bias. and Cokie Roberts still doing it. She's been doing it for, what, 40 years? Take a break here and come back. I've got some local weather for you.
When I was 21, it was a very good year.
All right, so about sanctuary cities, we are a sanctuary area. There's a few places in the country, just looking at a map of this stuff, and got a New York Times map here. Places where there's sanctuary status, California, except for what looks to be one county, is entirely a sanctuary state. Colorado is entirely a sanctuary state. Right below Colorado, we are 2, 4, 5, 6 counties, including our own, are sanctuary. Oregon, where all of the population is sanctuary. And that looks to be the same for Washington State. And then kind of intermittently in Iowa, Minnesota, New York, including, I believe, New York City, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, and Florida, one county in Georgia, one county in Texas. So it's you know, one county in Illinois. It's kind of sprinkled all around. So what is going on there? Here is a little on that round, and we do have a phone call. Thanks for a call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Chuck. How you doing, sir?
Really good. How about yourself? What's on your mind?
Oh, fair to middling, except I had to get up to go to work. Other than that, it's a wonderful day. let's talk about illegals and sanctuary sites and things. I think that President Obama, right before he left office, summed up the feelings of the left towards this very neatly in one sentence in one of his speeches. He said, "If you vote, you are a citizen." And I think that sums up the attitude of the left, the socialists, the liberals, the progressives.
Yes.
That if you can find some way to cast a vote, you're automatically a citizen. That's it. Nothing else matters.
And you know, the president who thinks he's so clever in the way he parses words and everything, and in the entire time he was in office, going off a hidden script and fooling people and getting a huge, obviously just getting an enormous sense of joy out of fooling people. And yet, looking back across his presidency, I think he's full of regret and anger that everything he worked for is getting flushed down the toilet in the first week.
Well, he had such disdain for our country, our Constitution, our laws, that he failed to consider the fact that what he was doing was extra legal and extra constitutional, because so much of it was based simply on the fact that he signed papers after he acknowledged that he couldn't do it. He goes and just starts signing presidential decrees.
Well,
you know,
Chuck,
not executive orders. With him, it was a royal decree.
Chuckles. Hey, you know,
who?
Chuckles. You know, it's a
no,
derivative.
Chuck.
Chuckles. Thanks for the call, Chuck.
No, there's no.
All right. So when Obama was doing all this, there was a sense of he's working off of a script. He's working off it, what I was trying to explain earlier, a sense of that the idea that there is a law or a script or some sort of a truth that is above our law. And that's what all these people, including Billy Garrett, are referring to. Now, out of the West, the history of the West, we had the natural law, which is arguably the most powerful and influential theory of law that's ever been established, and was part Greek and Roman theory, and then in part Christian and philosophical and all this. And I guess one of the high spots of that is John Locke, who then is the kind of the father of our Constitution and Bill of Rights and rule of law theory. But the left thinks that they have something like this, and they're going to, you know, so Billy Garrett thinks that he's following the real law by resisting Trump by establishing a sanctuary city. Now, what would Billy Garrett or any of these other people say to a family of someone who was killed by one of these radical or the one of these violent felons that was allowed to stay in the country? The president decided to make decisions and to go off this hidden law, this hidden script, this liberal law above the law, and he brought in and allowed to stay hundreds of thousands of violent criminals, and there have been many murders and rapes and assaults, violent assaults, and robberies and every other kind of violent crime. What would they say to those people? I mean, what would they say? You know, would Billy Garrett apologize and say, "I never thought that when we had a sanctuary city, that people who were escaping from other countries as felons would come here"? I mean, think of it. The most obvious thing in the world. If you're a violent felon, if you're a person who's trying to escape the legal system in Mexico, why not come to America? Because, you know, if you make it to the border, you will allow to cross over, and you might be worried, well, what if they find out I'm a felon? Well, in this case, it didn't matter because you could stay if you were a felon. So why wouldn't you, if you were a refugee from the law, if you were a wanted and violent person in Mexico, why wouldn't you come here? And what would, if once you relocated, what would make you change your ways? You know, because you could see that the country was going to keep you against all logic. Obviously, these people who are criminals in Mexico are going to come here and be criminals. So anyway, here's a little bit on the sanctuary city vowed to resist Trump order despite funding threat. Well, how much money would we be willing to give up? And I'll ask that from Billy Garrett. Billy Garrett, what would it be worth to you, your integrity, I guess, if you want to put it in those terms, which I'm sure you do. What would be, how much would, should the county be willing to pay to keep its sanctuary city status? $1 million, $10 million, $50 million, $100 million? I mean, how about for the state? Here's a little bit from, this is NBC News on this.
Slogan becoming one of his supporters' favorite phrases.
Build that wall, build that wall, build that wall.
Now, Donald Trump's set to start
immediate construction of a border wall.
Today, the president signing executive orders to direct money to start construction of his border wall with Mexico.
The wall. Everyone loves the wall.
Making good not just on that campaign promise, but on his pledge to crack down on sanctuary cities, places that don't prosecute immigrants for living there illegally, now blocking almost all federal funding to those areas. On beefing up immigration enforcement, today hiring 15,000 more agents. And after campaigning repeatedly with people whose loved ones were killed by undocumented immigrants, establishing a new office to advocate for those victims. Out of all of it, his wall's the most notable and by far the most expensive. An independent government report says fencing alone could cost an estimated $8.3 million per mile. Democrats estimating the total cost to build and secure the wall at $14 billion.
Who's going to pay for the wall?
Not according to Mexico. The president today acknowledging taxpayers will probably have to foot the bill first while waiting for a reimbursement, putting pressure on Mexico to pay up by possibly threatening to penalize remittances, money sent back home from immigrants here. President Trump not backing off that controversial plan or his controversial comments during the campaign about torture.
As far as I'm concerned, we have to fight fire with fire.
President Trump today reiterating where he stands on illegal methods like waterboarding in an interview with ABC News.
I want to do everything within the bounds of what you're allowed to do legally. But do I feel it works? Absolutely, I feel it works.
Still, the president's promising to listen to his top intelligence and defense officials who have both disavowed torture techniques. And after making false claims about widespread voter fraud, the president's promising a major investigation.
All right, so he'll investigate that. That's probably a good idea to look into that. But what do you think about Rahm Emanuel saying, you are welcome to come to our city, and his, why would he welcome people to a city when it is like a jungle? It is just, there's the sound of guns going off all day and all night, and especially on holidays, there's just total carnage over there. And I think they're up around, they're probably over 800 murders in the last 12 months. And think of all the people that were shot there that didn't die, and all the people that have been menaced. And so instead of focusing on that, he's getting up, Rahm Emanuel is, because he's part of this far-left cult. And he's saying, we've got a place here for you. We've got a safe place for you. Come over here. We got a sanctuary city. So totally misusing his office to defy federal law. And in addition to that, he is, he's luring people over. That would be like inviting someone to stay at your house and not telling them that you kept a tiger in your house, you know? So totally nuts. And these people are, and obviously one of the problems in Chicago is they don't have enough money to hire enough police officers to help keep the streets safe. In addition to the fact that one of their police officers shot a black kid as he was running away, which is totally, totally indefensible. And when Rahm Emanuel heard about it, he said, you know, it was before the election. He said, we'll settle this one. It never went to court. The family was paid $5 million. I don't know what happened to the cop. I'm sure he was fired, but, that's these people. And this is includes Obama, smoke and mirrors, distract people, keep people's eyes off the ball, do whatever you want, and then claim that you're helping him. So Obamacare, the story I've told 10 times already, they went to, I wish I could find that clip. They went to, over to Pennsylvania to find out why people voted for Trump. And the lady said the worst law in history. And the guy said, you know, my insurance went from $400 up to $1,700. And he was happy with his insurance. And then the deductible becomes $10,000. And we were just told last month that the cost of Obamacare would spike another 25%. Now, you've got a law that's totally failed, is deforming and really destroying the healthcare sector. And the president not only won't admit that it is failed, but that it was based on a one-party vote, but he gets his buddies in his friends in Washington to stand up and fight for it. I mean, that's the kind of people you're dealing with. Why would somebody take that approach? And I would say, obviously, the same kind of person that brings in violent felons from another country and allows them to stay, that person doesn't care about human beings. They care about something else. So what do they really care about? And it's power, right? I mean, that's what that, you care about power because that's all there is. In a world where there's no truth, all you can do is get power and, you know, try to, you know, enrich yourself. Anyway, as I was saying, we're going to have a little announcement tomorrow, but it's already, the topic has already been broached, and, you'll find out about all the details, but and I think I've got a little piece of this. Hold on a second here. here. I might be able to squeeze this in before the end of the show.
Obamacare helped propel Donald Trump to victory in a lot of formerly blue states. That includes Pennsylvania, which you remember went red for the first time in 28 years, primarily because of places like Adams County, where Trump beat Hillary Clinton by a more than 2-1 margin. That is where MSNBC's Cal Perry has traveled to. And Cal, we're really interested in this question of what they think about the idea of repealing Obamacare now.
Yeah, you know, most people here, as you said, pro-Trump. This was a very pro-Trump area. We saw Romney do well here 4 years ago. We saw Trump do even better. Look, we've been talking to people all day about their premiums, how premiums are rising. We've been talking to them about Medicare and Medicaid. But the overall takeaway for me has been the support that Trump has found on this issue, on flogging Obamacare as sort of an example of how federal government is letting people down. Take a listen to Ryan Fox, for example, who talks about how this issue in particular propelled him to vote for Donald Trump.
Certainly solidified my.
I'm trying to find this one part of this interview here, so bear with me. If not, I'll play it tomorrow. Yeah, I think it was from this. It was from this interview, but it was, looks like they've cut it up a little bit. But anyway, all right, 7:58. Don't forget to support my friends over at Cafe Agogo. Great burgers. Wonderful food. I'm playing piano over there on the weekend. Right across from Sam's Club, right across from the coffee shop. What's that place called? The little known place called Starbucks. 7:58 and running out of time here. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. Really enjoyed it. Hope you have a wonderful day. I got an announcement for you tomorrow. But have a good one. We'll meet back in 22 hours. Ciao. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces.
It was a very good year for a city girl who lived up the stairs with all that perfumed hair. And it came.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Undone.
Hello?
It's well, Kelly. Who is this?
21.
Oh, I just want to know. I'm playing piano.
It's about 6 o'clock.
Oh, after 6. That's cool.
Come on over, man. It'd be great to meet you.
I will. This is Edward.
Yeah,
I will go next week. This Friday.
Okay. Thanks,
bye.
Edward. Have a good day.
When I was.